All right, let's get the show on the road.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Yvette Etu.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Like a motion to approve minutes from last month?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And our financial report.
Good morning, everyone. In the absence of Wade and Gary, I think only the second time that I've done the financial report. Only 2 months in, so not a lot to report other than some capital spend. Zoo operating revenue is in line and expenses are in line with prior and current year budget. Golf operating is about the same period last year. Certainly the weather. We actually had a winter this past year, so we don't rely necessarily on a lot of revenue, but we have gotten some off the ground. Operating revenue for the enterprise and expense are nearly identical to 25, so they're mirroring each other. The trends are the same. Like I said, capital construction costs through February, Primate Forest, as we would expect, 3.7 in the month of February, 7.7 total for that project. Sailing Center, 2.4 for a total of 4.5 for the year. So those are really right in line with where we anticipated being in the month of February, closing the books, and now we're into the month of March. And I hear spring is supposed to be here tomorrow, so I will leave that as the financial report.
Wow.
That was a nice.
It was efficient.
Very efficient.
Any questions? Oh, come on. We should have some questions. New business.
New business. General action items this morning. We have 5 employee guests that represent 139 years of experience with the Metro Parks. Our very first retiring guest is Kim Gopp.
Yes.
I think we set the microphone height for Kim. I have no idea.
It's okay, we can just hold it up.
All right, I'm just going to stand, bend over like this. So 3 of my 4 retiring guests today, I had a personal relationship before I had my role as zoo director. So I've known Kim since the late 90s, mid 90s. And then there was one, because when I came back here, there were 4 individuals who had master's degrees in zoology from Oklahoma State University. When Chris Kamichik retired, that left just him and I, and now it's just me. When I met Kim, she was a curator, or she was an animal keeper with birds. And shortly after I left for graduate school, Kim kind of stepped into her role in the conservation program. And I've said many times that the zoo's conservation program is really the work of Kim Gopp. There's a couple programs that she inherited, the Fosse Fund and our relationship with Hutan Orangutan Conservation, but all of the programs that we currently support are because of Kim. Kim found talent, and essentially she's been finding startup conservation programs over the years and bringing them forward. So, and particularly her passion project, which is the Andean Bear Conservation Alliance. So Kim has been incredible for us, and she will be sorely missed.
Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, everyone. This is just an incredible honor. I'm so incredibly grateful for all the years at Cleveland Metro Parks. It's been my professional career and honestly a huge part of my life. And it's a family, and it's been interesting. It was interesting having to sign in as a visitor this morning. So just, I'm so grateful for everything and all the opportunities I've had over the years. And yeah, just thanks so much.
Kim, on behalf of Anthony J. Russo and the Board of Park Commissioners, we would like to recognize you with this resolution. And there is one very, very important part. When you look at inspiring conservation of the world, Kim Gopp, for the past 25 years, has provided leadership in the zoo's conservation programs and the distribution of more than $13 million in support of 1,000 wildlife conservation projects in 70 countries. Let's give her a huge round of applause. And in true fashion, I'm going out of order because Dr. Kuhar is still up there. We're going to go next with Tim Savona. The mic is still on the setup the right way.
Yeah, I could have left it there. So Tim is the baby of the bunch today. At 11, 12 years, Tim came to us with a lot of experience at the Toledo Zoo, the Columbus Zoo, the Indianapolis Zoo. And, you know, and Brian's leadership, we really looked at bringing revenue back into the system and supporting the operation. And Tim brought that to us. The running joke has been Tim did not meet a revenue opportunity that he didn't like. But what Tim did do for us was bring, you know, both that that entrepreneurial spirit, but understanding when revenue opportunities can negatively impact animal operations. And he did a great job. And Tim was such a powerful influence on his staff that he probably doesn't know this, but in the months in his absence, the team is sort of the catchphrase is, what would Uncle Tim do in helping support the operation? So I really appreciate Tim. He brought a different mindset and brought our zoo kind of into the next phase of our evolution by really figuring out how to enhance that guest experience, and he did extremely well.
Well, we'll just do this. So I can't think of a better place to end my career than here in Cleveland. I have appreciated the quality of leadership and just the excellent work culture that exists. So I just want to say thank you for that, and thank you for the opportunity to serve. I'm glad I was off today and could attend, so thanks.
To Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, and all of the guests that you have enhanced their quality of life for Asian Lantern Festival, Wild Winter Lights, Asian Lantern Festival drive-through, which I thought I was going to give you a heart attack when we decided to do that, drive cars to the zoo. You have truly excelled at your craft. We very much appreciate your time, talents, and efforts. Congratulations. Next up, Tad Schaffner.
So when William Stinchcomb hired Tad Schaffner, with all seriousness, Tad was one of the first group of employees that were hired by Cleveland Metro Parks after Cleveland Metro Parks took over the operation of the zoo. And you see the long list of positions that Tad has occupied. Tad has been a staple in our animal care program for years. I will always appreciate Tad, because when I was here as a young research student in the 90s, Tad was one of the few people in animal care who really had a passion for animal welfare and believed in using science to try and come up with solutions and answers. And that was really rare in the 90s. And so I appreciate Tad embracing that, because I think that is what kept Tammy Bettinger from screaming and running for the hills early on in her career. And so Tad's been very passionate about that. He's always been a very passionate teacher for young professionals in animal care. When I first came back here, Tad was one of the go-to guys to net an animal or to rope an animal or grab hands on an animal. And we had a generation of keepers that were coming up in a world that was focused on training, but those are still critical skills. And I asked Tad, I said, you know, you're not going to be here forever. You know, I was almost wrong, but but I asked him to really teach that. And he spent the next several years kind of stepping back and showing animal care staff how to do those skills that don't often get taught. He was a leader in our intern program for animal care and our seasonal animal care program. And he leaves a really long legacy and a bridge between the history of our zoo and where we're at today. And I'll always be very appreciative of what Tad did for us.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, it's been a pretty wild 49 years. One of the Chris things about some of the things we taught younger keepers, and many times when I would tell them, like, okay, you can do it this way, or we've done it that way, you know, and it always wasn't the greatest way, but, you know, and a lot of times they would look at me and they would say, how are you still alive? And But to show how far I went back, when I started, the executive director of Parks was Harold Schick. Okay, so that's, and Leonard Goss was the zoo director. So during that time, I worked for four park directors and four zoo directors. So, but it's been a great ride, and just the diversity of things I was able to do. And in the park, I couldn't have asked for a better employer than the Cleveland Metro Parks all these years. So thank you.
On behalf of the individual Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to, this is the longest serving employee that I've handed the plaque to, 49 years, so this is truly remarkable. One of his really unique things was the zoo enrichment program that continues to expand and flourish. I think we're one of the leaders in the entire world, and you were part of that. So congratulations on your 49 years of history here and serving all of our guests. Next up, David Winkler.
So Dave and I haven't really talked about this, but when I was a student here, I came here as a student from the University of Akron, and Dave was a keeper in the center section of PCA. And while I was there collecting data, I didn't really know much about zoos. And Dave and his now wife, Claire, and a number of other keepers in the building would stop and talk to me and talk about what zoos were. And it was those conversations with the animal care staff in that building that kind of lit my passion for zoos and got me excited. And I'm sure he doesn't even remember those conversations, because he probably had that conversation with dozens, if not hundreds, of other people who are, you know, spastic 20-year-olds who wanted to work in a zoo. But that just shows his passion for what we do here and the zoo programs. What Dave's really been impactful for in the past 10 years is, you know, one of the things we did early on in my tenure as the director is we changed the direction of our elephant program. And Dave came in with some elephant experience, but a lot of background with primates. And I've joked many times that, you know, Dave treats our elephant program like he treated our chimp program when he worked with chimpanzees. And I think that makes a tremendous difference, is that his patience, his understanding that you have to get the animals to work with you, not for you, and his kind of quiet but strong leadership in that program has been really incredible. So again, I keep saying this with everybody that comes up here today, but I appreciate what Dave's done for our program, not just with his work in the primate building, but in all the work that he's done to lead our elephant program into the next chapter. So thank you, Dave.
I was just going to thank Chris. That was very kind. And I was one of those people that looked at Tad and asked how he was still alive after watching him do it. Just very fortunate. I think the Metro Parks, I've had the best career I can imagine, and I appreciate it very much.
David, on behalf of Anthony Jubers and the Board of Park Commissioners, we very much appreciate your efforts in bringing our elephant program into one of the most notable across the entire world. We very much appreciate your 31 years of service, and I appreciate your always candor, because if I ever asked a question, you always gave it to me straight. So I appreciate that. Congrats. The next one is Harold Harrison. And I actually realized in the middle part of this that I actually had to do this one, which doesn't happen very often. So for those of you who don't know, Harold was my very first hire. So it was one of the things that I think realizing when you come into the organization such as this, with stable leadership and a huge history, it was one of the things where the people power, the people that are all here today, are part of what has made this organization world class. And Harold has been with me every step of the way. Now I got to put my glasses back on because there's so many things I have to read here. The Archer Awards, 2013 Executive of the Year. When I think of the Smart Culture Awards, we talk about culture beating strategy. We talk about the North Coast, 99 best places, 15 years in a row. Let's give them a huge round of applause. We revamped our entire onboarding process. It has truly been a pleasure to work with Harold
His entire team is here with him today. He's got new kicks on, which I have been the beneficiary of shoes that he hasn't liked over periods of time. But we are truly going to miss his time, talent, treasures, and efforts. As I said, gone but not forgotten. And this is like the firm. You never really get to leave. Congratulations, Gerald.
So when I was riding in this morning, I thought about, I've been doing this for 15 years and never thought about myself being up here. So you see it every month, and then it's sort of bittersweet that I'm leaving. Brian, you know, it's been a great relationship, great friend. The board, been together for a long time. You've been very, very supportive of HR throughout the years, but it is bittersweet. Jokingly, the sweet part is that I feel like I probably hit the lottery because my son is coming off the payroll because he's graduating. So he graduates in 8 weeks, but the bitter part is that I am leaving. You know, the organization, Brian touched on it, it's well run. I think it's regionally probably the best run organization, government organization in the country. And I say that from experience because I interacted with different individuals, consultants over the course of hundreds of them over the course of 15 years. And if you tell me there is one in the country that's better, I'm going to call you a liar until you prove otherwise, because I've seen other organizations and how they run, what they're doing. You've had gold medal organizations call us about how we do things, and they just won the best park district in the country. So they're calling us to say, well, we want to know how you've done it. And I think I gave a speech at Case Western Reserve the other night, and they always ask, why are you successful? And I told them there's three things. One, there's a vision, right? There's a vision coming from this group, you, that cascades down through the organization. Second thing is that in the middle of this, there's people. And we've done a very good job of hiring people. And I would argue that, you know, we're good at getting a lot of things done with limited resources. We probably have one of the best marketing departments in the country when it comes to marketing the products of this organization. And then those people drive the culture of the organization. And you've heard several people here talk about the culture of the organization. So it's those three things that hopefully carries on into the future.
Congrats. Board of Park Commissioners, your entire team, congratulations on your 15 years of service to Metro Parks. We appreciate you. You can hold the plaques. Tad's got his coat and his box. He's ready to go. Here, hang on a second.
Tad, give me your box, please.
Recommended action recognizing these fine five individuals falls on the bottom portion of page 11, recognizing their more than 139 years of service to the Metro Parks.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You're free to stay, but if you would like to leave, you are more than welcome to.
I'm speechless, but I think the way Harold summed it all up and listening to all of you, we've seen so many people come through here. If there's a consistent refrain, and I think we all feel it, this place matters. It matters to our community and everyone who works here. You make it matter and we appreciate it.
Thank you. I will move into the 2026 budget adjustment number two. The total amount for the budget amendment is $1.72 million. $525,000 for the barge funded by donations, $321,000 for North Coast Harbor for improvements, Rocky River Emerald Necklace improvements funded by a grant, $179,000 for West Creek Greenway funded by West Creek Conservancy, $120,000 for the Dunham Park Greenway funded by donations, and $111,000, which is a continuation of a grant for the Zoo Brownfield money. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 12 for the budget adjustment number two.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Club Metro 2026 financial request from Angelique Hilsman, our Club Metro treasurer. Club Metro has been around for quite a number of years. Current membership sits at 178, helps support employee activities, engagement, networking. When you're covering six counties and 700 full-time employees, they are asking for a modest increase that has not been done in a number of years to match their membership dues of $7,500. They will match that with their dues. The recommended action for the Club Metro support falls in the mid portion of page 13.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is increase for fire extinguisher systems and service inspections. Board saw this back in April 17th. We have just an additionally revised consumption award for our fire inspections to George Petak and Sons for fire equipment and supplies. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 14.
That seems to be a rather substantial increase from, did we use that many more fire extinguishers? I mean, that's
it looks like the contract was terminated. And so my question is, well, number one, why is it terminated? And then is it a new three-year contract?
Yeah, so as we move forward from the items in between the 75 that move forward on the three-year term, we also had state inspections across, and so they found certain things where we needed to continue to increase or enhance, especially with our new construction in certain areas. We've added the sailing center, so all those things started to compound over time.
Is the contract then per fire extinguisher, or is it just a, how does that work?
It's for the inspection. Go ahead, Rose, if you've got.
Yeah, it's overall and then per inspection, yes.
But there are systems inspections too, as we look through the hoods and all the other things that we have to do with the restaurants and other things. So it's a totality across the all of our 400 plus different buildings.
Okay, I see. So it can't be. There's not a unit price that could Correct. Be used here. Thank you.
The recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 14.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Authorization to submit grant applications and commit funds, recreational trails program. This is in the Hinckley reservation. Thank you, David, for bringing that up. This is part of the work that the Metro Parks continues to do to connect people. The proposed grant is in the amount of $150,000 through the recreational trails program. You can see the highlighted particular areas there. And Cleveland Metro Parks will include part of the match, the endowment fund earmarked specifically for Hinckley Lake.
The light green, that's basically the frontage of the property we acquire?
Correct, yep, and that'll be a new Benchton Trail. And we've done some work on the pine trees and some mitigation there where that stand was starting to fall down. So we're working on cleaning that area up, creating new views coming across. If you actually look at the totality of the lake with the trails, there are a lot of areas that are actually, you can't actually see the lake, so we're creating some new vistas into the lake as part of this work.
Excellent.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Fourth amendment to the professional services agreement for environmental services. This is the Wyrus Aluminum Foundry. This was acquired back in 2021. We added 0.9 acres to the Metro Parks, and a key critical component tied to the zoo's next phase. This amendment in particular, since the building had been demolished, soil was remediated in 2023. HZW's finalized to submit the VAP program and letter review from the EPA finalizing the documents, basically certifying that we've cleaned this particular site and then it's ready to go for its next stage of life with the zoo. This has been covered by funds dealt with through the ODNR. So this is recommended action on page 17, middle portion.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment number 11792, design builder Cleveland Metro Parks Wood Creek Fist Passage and Stabilization. This is in Bedford. This actually dates back to an RFQ back in 2024. This is partnerships with not only the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency, the Ohio EPA, Ohio Lake Erie Commission. We were awarded $450,000 through the Great Lakes Restoration Program, $50,000 from the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. And we're working on beneficial fish. This particular GMP manages soil erosion, sediment staging, and works on the fist passage so they can move better. We did go through a competitive process, and the guaranteed maximum price with Stantec Consulting falls in the mid portion of page 19.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment number one. The first, contract 1791, Gordon Park Improvements at Lakefront Reservation. This is GMP1. We started this process back in 2024. This has been grant funded to the tune of $8 million from the Jack Joseph and Mort Mandel for Gordon Park South. We have worked diligently with community support across the particular areas through the CDCs. Interestingly enough, this was not part of the original lakefront transfer, but after COVID happened and a number of things, the park had been closed for a period of time. Cleveland Metro Parks looks to revitalize it with the generous donation of the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel. This is the first work that we will be doing, which will include bathrooms, playgrounds, regrassing and trails around it, and a redo of the front entrance. The guaranteed maximum price of $5,201,045 to Next Gen Construction falls on the bottom portion of page 20.
Brian, there was a sort of an outreach to the community asking what they wanted to do there. What did that come up with?
It was fascinating to see a different portion of an area served that Metro Parks hadn't served for a period. I mean, we'd served Gordon Park North, but the southern portion was very similar to what the Metro Parks, the 25,000 plus acres looks like. They wanted open space, they wanted trails, they wanted a playground, they wanted a bathroom. And so when we look at those are the first phases, there are subsequent phases. There'll be some pavilions, some barbecue pits, the views of the sunset, you know, the Lake Erie sunset will be there as well. So we're gonna try to reimagine the road. We'd also like to partner with ODOT and our partners to calm 72nd Street down just a little bit so the traffic isn't going through so fast. We're also looking at potentially painting a bridge along with the abutments, really trying to calm the area there and basically trying to unify where the freeway cut this park off many, many years ago. So the centered lawn, the great lawn, is, we believe, the center feature of the entire park. We've moved the restroom to the further south component and then tied that into the playground. And there is an expansion for other opportunities there in the park as money becomes available. First phase is about $5 million, and then we'll be additive to get to the 8 to the 10. Metro Parks is putting $1 million in this year and $1 million next year.
Thank
There's
you.
A reference to two GMPs to meet the timetable. Can you define the two GMPs?
I will have Sean define that.
Morning, commissioners. When we provide the update at the end of this meeting on capital projects, we'll have some images to share with you as well on Gordon Park. The question in terms of two GMPs is, as we've been approaching these projects and putting together engineering plans and then permitting those plans, we are putting together separate GMPs. Gordon Park, we're doing that in this vein as well. So what you see in front of you today is GMP1. We expect we will be returning to you in the fall of this year with GMP2, which will cover pavilions and other improvements that Brian mentioned that we would bring forward in this first phase of work to be done by the end of 2027.
Okay, so it's really meant phases, as the GMPs will be for phases.
In essence, yes.
Okay.
This first phase of work, we're breaking into two GMPs, and then as we work with donors for future improvements at the park, there will be multiple GMPs following.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay very close.
And one other question, either one of you, because you mentioned ODOT. I think it's interesting that we find we're working much more with ODOT to help remediate areas that ODOT originally acquired. What do you anticipate the role is going to be with ODOT here when you talk about calming 72nd?
I mean, not only there in particular, but IB4, when they work on IB4, it's going to have its impacts to what potentially Burke could be as well. So right. There's a tie in there. But Gordon Park in particular, and also CHEERS, Cleveland Harbor Eastern Embayment Resilience Strategy, some of the traffic areas that across 90 with the bridges.
What, 10 years out, maybe?
We hope actually, Sean can tie in, but I think less potentially if the first phase actually goes with the funding that we've been receiving so far.
We have several requests out for the early action portion of CHEERS, which is the part by the J-hook from the former Lakeshore Power Plant. And we've been coordinating with ODOT now about 6 to 8 years. They actually started looking at a safety study to look at potentially reorientating the interchanges at MLK and 72nd because they are rather close. So they've been a very good partner in this whole process.
When you say reorienting, you mean losing one?
Either that or potentially realigning some of the on and off ramps, especially when you are headed eastbound on I-90, the on ramp from 72nd in conjunction with the off ramp for MLK has posed some issues in the past, but actually now with Opportunity Corridor reducing the traffic at that interchange, it helps. But we're working with them on potential future modifications.
Yeah, anything to soften that angle. Nice.
And those take time. They get in the hopper, they get funded or don't get funded, and then they continue over a period of time.
Motion.
Oh, yes. Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
The next is contract number amendment number 12, guaranteed maximum price 11. I'm just going to have Sean come back up here. Contract 1543, this is construction manager. This is the Gorilla Primate Forest Edition, just to tie in the various components that we're going into this as we're hopefully going into our final phases of the orangutan exhibit front entrance and et cetera.
Great. Thank you, Brian. So like the question we just answered on the multiple GMPs, the Primate Forest Project has been a perfect example of that, where we've brought forward, we are now on GMP 11, multiple GMPs as the work has been defined, the prices have been defined, and so now we can bring that forward. We expect that this is the final GMP for this phase of Primate Forest, which we have been calling Sequence 1. So that includes the remodel to the rainforest, which has given us some surprises. Anytime you're working on a building, this one in essence is over 30 years old now. We've worked really well to adapt on the fly to make sure that we are addressing the infrastructure of that building. So we've almost done a full redone of HVAC, upgrades to electrical, all the while improving most of the exhibits in the rainforest. Construction, not only in the rainforest, but on the addition is going very well. Actually, today we start to see the delivery of some of the interpretives, the living forest concept that we're building in the cross-country mortgage atrium is coming together. We are on schedule to be done this summer with the project. So.
Very good. Recommended action falls in bottom portion of page 23 into 24.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Change order number 4, contract 1837, Mandel Community Trail lighting and installation. This particular project is fully funded by the Jack Joseph and Mort Mandel at their request to have lighting from East 9th all the way to MLK. It was the perfect time to do it as the trail was being sequenced. This is a very unique construction bid because we didn't necessarily go linear from 9th all the way to MLK. We did sections of it as they became available through different construction and different opportunities. It took us a bit of time to work through all of the different duct banks, pole boxes, light pole bases, to make sure that we had the illumination infrastructure under the guidance of the Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works. Again, this is a fully funded project that came from the Jack Joseph and Mort Mandel. It provides lighting all the way end to end. This is change order number 4 in the amount of $2,178,761. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 26.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
that ends the general action items, competitive process awards. We have a number of them. The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 27. Network communication cabling, Rocky River Emerald Necklace kayak launch and drop-off area, something that we promised to do. We did get some assistance for that. Mature tree inspection care, pruning of the lakefront. Easy go carts, those are going to Ironwood to replace 15 plus year old carts, in some instances maybe even older. XGG drainage to continue to keep up with the Metro Parks standards. A couple of used greens mowers because of the cost, and then wild winter lights at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 27.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We'll go to approval of vouchers and payroll, resolution number 2603036. It's in compliance.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments? All right.
I guess, oh no. Fight's back. I was thinking they might have left it for me.
Blame Sean.
So it's Sean. Not even a pointer, it's broken. Yes, park visits are invaluable for health and wellness. Why then do you want to risk that by selling alcohol at every venue? I recall Commissioner's surprise when Euclid Beach residents spoke emphatically against alcohol there. Now the citizens of Hinckley are opposing your liquor applications for the boat. Instead, take the high road by showing how much can be enjoyed without drinking. Alcohol disinhibits, encouraging risky behavior, often spoiling others' experiences, and challenging law enforcement. Strongly associated with multiple cancers, as well as liver disease and addiction. Consumption has been decreasing for several years, increasingly moving to NA beer and mocktails. Don't undermine that by promoting its purchase and consumption, all to chase questionable revenue. Drinking may be pleasurable, but that hardly warrants Metro Parks' assistance. If alcohol was so necessary and harmless, then why was it long banned in Metro Parks? Why promote it now when we are aware of the consequences? Should patrons just BYOB? I'm not a lawyer, but what are the possible outcomes if you rent out watercraft and sell alcohol? Presumably you lose recreational immunity. What about your liability as the seller? Hinckley Township citizens and their elected reps have expressed valid concerns about your desire for a liquor license. Risks further heightened by the lack of water rescue equipment at Hinckley Dam. Those drownings at Wallace Lake can't be ignored. They happened even before you added booze there. Water is an attractive nuisance, and it falls to you to maximize our safety and minimize your liability. Resist any temptation to claim that you are merely providing a service. Weigh the risk versus benefit. Make the choice you can be proud to defend. Thank you.
Brian, a question of fact. Didn't the Metro Park serve alcohol way back?
So there's, what I can say is, prior to our administration here, there were liquor licenses in place, not only at the zoo, but some of the golf courses as well. So they've been in place longer than this administration has been here. There have certainly been enhanced by, you know, newer activities across the waterfront and other locations. So this is a proposed area. This particular area is I think called the Buzzard Roost area, or the spillway. I apologize, the spillway area. It's not where boats are actually rented. And I don't know the fact that Hinckley's opposing, they're questioning, and of which we're providing some information. So ultimately, those decisions come from the State Controlled Liquor Board. We have had success with them across a number of locations. It's not a be-all, end-all. It's not a revenue grab. It's more complementary. And it's under a controlled environment, which gives actually a better opportunity for the police to patrol because it's supposed to be in a specific area. So,
but I believe one of our historical talks way back, she was talking about how at Edgewater Park, you could rent a bathing suit. And
for
you,
5 cents.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For 5 cents. And then you had a, you could also, you had to pay to dance with someone, I believe, and then you could buy a beer. So that goes back when people were running bathing suits. So pretty long way.
Do we have anyone else? All right, thank you. I'll move on to information.
We have the first reading of the trademark, copyright, and logo use. Rose?
Yeah, thank you, Brian. So this represents an upgrade to our existing trademark policy. And you'll remember several years ago, we incorporated the policy to more formally protect not only our name, but our logo. And especially as the National Park saw some private vendors utilizing the names of some historic hotels. So we have had success with protecting our logos, especially as more and more folks want to co-opt other folks' work, especially locally. Some other organizations are challenged with this. Katie McVoy will just go over the revisions. Katie's work has won her one of the Notable Women in the Law, Crane's 2026 Award, bringing this intellectual property work back in-house, saving us money and not using outside counsel. And so, Katie, thank you for giving an overview of the changes.
Thank you, Rose. Good morning, commissioners. As Rose said, we've spent the last several years trying to bring the registration and maintenance of our trademarks and copyrights in-house and have actually filed for two registrations. One has successfully received registration for our ABCA logo, and the Boo at the Zoo is currently under consideration. We've trademarked a couple of books. We've trademarked some signs at Wild Winter Light, so we've had good success. And because of moving that in-house and working with marketing to really enhance the way we protect our intellectual property from misuse by third parties, we thought it was time to update the policy. The biggest change you'll see is we've gone from the trademark and logo usage policy to the trademark copyright and logo usage policy. So the policy now incorporates registration and use of copyrights, which can include things that are obvious like books and artwork, but also can include high value code that our IT department might use. So we've enhanced the protection for copyrights, and we have also developed some guidelines for registration of trademarks and copyrights in particular. They enjoy common law protections when they're not registered, but as the board might remember from Asian Lantern Festival, there are enhanced protections when they're registered with the federal organizations. So the guidelines give direction to our departments about when it makes sense to register a trademark, when it makes sense to register a copyright, and how to go about doing that in consultation with the legal department and the marketing department.
Great. Thank you, Katie. And you'll see, since the changes are substantial, this is our first reading according to our bylaws. We'll come back to you next month with a move to approve. And if you have any intervening questions in the interim, Katie or I can field those questions.
Great. Thank you.
I had a question. For example, sailing. We're making a major initiative in sailing. And should we have some sort of a logo and some sort of an image that has to do with Cleveland sailing? Sailing is losing popularity, but just as a general sport, sailboats is not selling as much as well as powerboats. But I think that there's a tradition here that could be enhanced and preserved by having some sort of an image that captures the new sailing center as part of Cleveland sailing or something that relates to that sort of thing.
I think we can definitely address that. I think across this particular region, every yacht club is currently full. Each one has a waiting list. So I don't know if the Midwest necessarily agrees with your assertion on the sailing, because it's still very, very popular. All of our numbers, Commissioner Moore, the reason we built the sailing center was specifically because every one of our classes sold out within minutes. And so we were under capacity. We didn't have enough capacity. So that's why we continued to push forward. So I think there's things, bowling, golf, you know, they kind of rise and they go up and down. But I think to your point, we'll take a look at the protections of the galley and the sailing center and some of the other things with our partners in the foundry.
And Brian, do you want to mention the contribution of each of the yacht clubs? So as you've amended their leases, there's a required contribution to the youth sailing program, which also is an ability which will aid the programming and bring more young people to enjoy sailing and make it more accessible.
That's terrific. And I think it'll require a little bit of work on the art side of it to make it sort of unique.
We agree. Thank you, Katie.
We'll sail ahead.
The next item is the Cleveland Metro Parks 2025 real estate report. From the very first 3 acres to now more than 25,418. I think the microphone is set up very perfectly for, oh no, sorry, it's too high. So close.
Small adjustment.
Stephanie, take it away.
Thanks, Brian, and good morning, commissioners. Thanks for having me this morning. We're gonna give you a quick highlight of some of the accomplishments of 2025 from our real estate division. So just for a quick overview, you guys have the report in front of you, which is, you know, obviously contains a lot more details. I'm gonna go over more big picture type of things, some of the highlights, some of the accomplishments from 2025. And I was thinking this morning as I was preparing, this is the 20th year I've made this report, and each year I think to myself, how am I gonna come up with something new, something creative, something we haven't talked about before? And, you know, to our team's credit, to the organization's credit, it wasn't difficult. There's always something unique and forward-thinking, different ways of acquiring and conserving land. So we'll hit on some of that today. Some themes that came through, you know, we worked a lot within the city of Cleveland this year through a lot of different mechanisms, a lot of trail connections, and that's a lot of kudos to our planning and design and development teams that have secured that funding over the years, and now those trails are coming to fruition and we're actually establishing the real estate interest for those trails. Partnerships all the way around from our conservation agencies to community partners, land banks, and then some strategic acquisitions that we try to, you know, go out and secure land by reaching out to people in certain areas. And then we'll give you a quick overview of where we are with acreage. I'll go over each property individually and then talk a little bit about our land stewardship as well, as that's another component of some of the work that we do on a real estate team. So this gives you a quick picture of where all the properties are that we acquired in 2025. It's often nice to kind of put it back on a map, reflect. Usually we see a nice span across all the reservations. This year we acquired land in 9 of the 18 reservations, so we touched half of our reservations with new land acquisitions. I will say, you will see, you know, this year we have quite a bit here in our kind of more urban core, from West Creek to Garfield Park, Washington, Ohio River Canal, Lakefront. And while there's 14 numbers on this map, this represents actually 31 separate transactions. So given the scale, I couldn't show every single property. So you'll see over here in several of the areas, you know, Washington, there's multiple, and Lakefront, multiple acquisitions within one dot. So that gives you an idea of where we were, what we acquired. But again, quite a bit more than 14. So here's high level numbers. We're at 25,418 acres, and you can kind of see that CLE speaks to a lot of work within the city of Cleveland. We acquired a total of 68 acres. 30 of those acres were donated, and much of that is again through those partnerships with other communities, conservation partners. Those 31 transactions landed in 9 different reservations, 6 different communities. And then I think something really unique about this year, we purchased over $6 million worth of property, but had nearly $6 million in grants. So our expenditure for Cleveland Metro Parks was under $500,000. So I think it really speaks to our development team and partners that we were able to almost fully fund the land that we purchased. Another theme for this year, again, was trail projects. We have 6 different projects that came into our land holdings through different things like easements, leases, all different types of kind of real estate techniques to get those properties under our land holdings. And then, you know, another interesting thing is you'll see feeder rivers this year seem pretty high to me. I think a lot of that, again, is in the city of Cleveland along the Cuyahoga River. We have the Irishtown Bend Trail easement coming online. We have a lease for some riverfront trail just north of Rivergate. Even, you know, the pier that connects Windy Park Bridge to the Coast Guard station is right at the mouth of the Cuyahoga River. So all those numbers sort of add up, much of which are along the Cuyahoga River. So again, some of the themes, 70% of the acreage that we acquired this year was within the city of Cleveland. That totaled nearly 50 acres. And lots of work with our partners. We worked with West Creek Conservancy on the Irishtown Bend Trail easement, as well as an acquisition in West Creek Reservation and South Chagrin Reservation. We worked with Western Reserve Land Conservancy and Euclid Creek Reservation for the acquisition of the Euclid Beach Mobile Home Community. And then multiple parcels with our Cuyahoga County Land Bank and our City of Cleveland Land Bank, which span a number of reservations, and then lots of community partners as well. You know, a number of lease and management agreements, easements for trails, and then I think our most notable acquisition was the acquisition of the Euclid Beach Mobile Home Community. This was our largest acquisition of the year at 28.8 acres. I think, as many of you know, this is a very unique parcel. It's one of the few remaining lakefront parcels of its size in the City of Cleveland, really building up on the ability for our community to access Lake Erie. It was also impactful because of the amount of funding that went into the project. We received over $5 million from the Clean Ohio Conservation Fund. Western Reserve Land Conservancy also put in $800,000. And so again, that acquisition was, you know, really fully funded, and then more funding is being put into the restoration of the property. So you can kind of see the sequence of those photos moving from more of a developed parcel to removing some of that hardscape and really naturalizing this to become part of Euclid Creek Reservation, the lakefront portion. So I'm going to jump into each acquisition a little bit. I don't want to go into too much detail, but this slide represents all City of Cleveland properties. And these are unique acquisitions in the sense they are acquired through leases and licenses. These four properties, for example, the leases range from 10 years to 99 years. So each of these have very different terms and conditions. You know, thinking back on the year, our acreage is a little bit lower, but this explains the work. So, you know, negotiating a purchase agreement, you're mainly talking about how much is the purchase price, maybe a closing date. But when you're negotiating these leases, there's so many things to be considered. Who's going to operate, who's going to maintain, who's going to be responsible for capital improvements. So that's where a lot of our work as a team went into this year. And a lot of great partners. So you can see the Department of Army put in nearly a $7 million investment into the pier that connects Wendy Park to the Coast Guard station, really improving upon a concrete overlay for that pier. And then we installed some fencing and some future utility connections. So that is one acquisition. We also worked with the Greater Cleveland Regional Transit Authority to acquire 1.4 acres. This is just under the RTA viaduct. So the viaduct sits 80 feet in the air, and we were able to work with them to preserve the land underneath to expand upon Rivergate Park and the Crooked River Skate Park. We worked with Kingfisher Harbor to acquire another acre on the Cuyahoga River. They were awarded $2 million for the acquisition and construction of a public riverfront. And as part of that grant with ODNR, you know, we really needed to show that the property would be protected for the public. So that's our role here as Cleveland Metro Parks, is making sure that that parcel is open to the public. And then lastly, we amended the lakefront lease for a seventh time to include the North Coast Harbor. So that's a 6.2 acre acquisition. It's a marina with 53 boat slips, and that comes under our lakefront lease.
Now, how will that be managed, the North Coast Harbor?
Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, it'll be run by our enterprise team. So Nick Delvitt, who was over at East 55th, he'll move over there. He was the assistant marina manager under August. So he'll take over this particular location. And I can only tell you, when you hire, you know, amazing people, he's been with us a number of years. He has been reaching out to yacht clubs and marinas all over the Great Lakes, and he's bringing in more boats. We're also looking at the way this grant was actually, the way the marina was built, there was a grant which really allowed for it only to be in its transient nature. And so we're working at a line that will allow for brew boats and other things to come in and out of there, which they kind of were sporadically. So we want a more formal relationship with that. But having control over that also allows us to partner with our East 55th and all of the other marinas along the way. So it's a very, very complementary to what we're trying to do. The trailhead for the East 9th to MLK sits within about 200 yards of there. So that will be the trailhead for the Jack Joseph and Mort Mandel Trail. So it's really tying into also what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is doing with their 150 plus million dollars worth of renovations there. So we're really looking at that to be very complementary to what we do as an organization.
But is
run by us.
So we'll have East 55th Street crew running.
This will be a separate area, but they're in concert with each other. So August and Nick work together.
Okay.
Where do you link the trail with the harbor?
So right up on the corner of basically 9th and North Marginal.
So you go up 9th.
Yep, up 9th, yeah. So that'll be the trailhead particularly there. Yeah. And then the green space and the tie-in to that particular area, but really a downtown-centric focus. I think when you look at the capacity of this area to drive regional the regional recreation economy through boating, fuel prices are going to be interesting this summer to see where they land. But in general, this particular harbor area fits our profile very well.
Nice.
Very good.
So continuing with the City of Cleveland theme, while I have four properties listed here, this actually represents 20 separate parcels. So over the years, we've worked with the land bank, the City of Cleveland Land Bank. We can, you know, take their shapefile of all the properties they own in our GIS, our mapping software, and load it against our boundaries and see, okay, these parcels touch or these parcels are in close adjacency, and then start to identify, you know, which properties of interest for us.
So 1.6 acres, how many lots is that?
That's 15 parcels. Yeah. So again, acreage is not big this year, transactions yeah. are. So, and that was a long time coming. I mean, this work with the City of Land Bank, we went through some staff changes they had. We have to put in an application to apply for the acquisition of these parcels, and it has taken several years, to be honest, for 15 parcels. So five of the parcels are in Garfield Park Reservation next to our Mill Creek Falls area, mm-hmm. and 10 parcels are in Washington Reservation. Those are adjacent to the reservation itself, Washington Golf Course, and then also along the Slavic Village Downtown Connector, which is you know, a new trail going through the area. So yeah, those are, it's quite a lot for that transaction. The next three parcels, Neo Phoenix, Mabel, and CCLRC, are all within Washington Reservation. Again, Cuyahoga County Land Bank, so another land bank, not the city, that represented three parcels in Washington Reservation as well. And still continue with the City of Cleveland, but these are trail connections. So we worked with the City of Cleveland for the Rivergate Riverfront Trail. So it's a 15-foot wide lease area that goes along that grass parcel there. You can see it hashed right up in here. So continuing the connection from Rivergate Park to Heritage Park and Settlers Landing. We also worked with West Creek Conservancy on the Irish Town Bend Trail easement. So initially Land Studio assigned that easement to West Creek Conservancy. Then we amended the easement to expand the land holdings, and then that was transferred to us. So that is a good representation of some of the partnerships with West Creek. And then also working more with private partners. So Fairview Hospital, we acquired 0.6 acres as part of the Old Lorraine Road Connector. So, you know, Fairview Hospital sits kind of atop a steep slope that goes down into the Rocky River Valley. We were able to, you can see this trail is, you know, construction picture here, following the Old Lorraine Road down into Rocky River Valley. And that connects 1,400 residents within a half mile. So really opening up the ability to get down into the valley from up there at the hospital. And then these are more trail connections. We're moving on from the City of Cleveland to other community partners. So we've worked with the Village of Glen Willow, the City of Garfield Heights, and the City of Solon. So the Village of Glen Willow is a quarter mile stretch between Bedford Reservation and South Chagrin Reservation. So that creates a trail where there was a gap in our Emerald Necklace. So that's a really exciting thing. That's along Richmond Road. And we entered into a lease with them for the Richmond Road Connector right there within the right of way. Then the City of Garfield Heights was taking on a street project to really revamp Garfield Boulevard. So a complete street. They were working on infrastructure, road improvements, and then the trail as well. So this is nearly a mile that stretches from Warner Road to Turney Road, and it connects our Mill Creek Connector Trail in Ohio Narrow Canal Reservation to Garfield Park Reservation. And then lastly, working with the City of Solon on the Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail. This trail starts at Somm Center Road and continues along an old railroad bed to the Solon border. And then we will connect an additional 1,500 feet of the trail to Chagrin River Road. So a lot of these communities had a lot of investments through trail grants and those types of things. And then we're able to enter into lease agreements and easements to.
Let me ask Brian a question. Yep. This business of connecting is key, as you've mentioned that time and time again. Is there a way we could get a metric which is easier to describe and easier to understand than the 7 minute or the 5 minute distance to a connector to the park. Could we have some way of defining it so people would could so that would jump out at people, because it's a major accomplishment. I mean, some of these little connectors are god awful expensive, but they serve a function that's vital.
If you go back to, you know, the Connecting Cleveland, which was one of the trail projects, that why that one was so successful is because trails got built and they weren't connected. And so there were small gaps. One of them, you know, goes up by St. Malachi, you know, to the lakefront bikeway that then now connects to the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail. So
I'm sorry.
I thought I was getting some theme music here. I think to your point, that may be something that we, the Metro Parks, actually work with the Cuyahoga County Planning Commission and the Cuyahoga County Greenway Plan, because of how they've looked at the totality of the county based on some mapping, and with, depending on how AI and some of these other things, we may be able to pull something. The aspiration is 880 or 8, so whether you're 8 years old or 80, to get connected to the park, whether it's via a trail or whether it's via a land acquisition. So when you look at those capacities, we continue to try to do those, but the metric we'd have to delve a little bit deeper into, but I think we can partner with them on pulling some of the data, because not all trails are ours.
Yeah, they don't have to be.
Well, and a segue to that, I think, would be over the last 15 years, the number of communities that have partnered to make those connections, both in terms of their contribution of capital, but also the connectivity of their residents.
I mean, a great example system of that is the Valley Parkway connector. It started back in 08 and 09, and, you know, took a number of years, but each community brought, you know, a number of, you know, $100,000 plus. One brought $50,000. So it was one of the things, $250,000 from the communities. They knew the value. So North Royalton, Broadview, and Brecksville made that connection actually happen because it was cash.
But I see that as a way of showing how property taxes go into remuneration, repaying the people, you know, who directly impact their communities.
Correct. Let me work on your request.
Thank you.
Yeah, these are all good.
So we're going to continue on with some of our partnerships. So really want to highlight West Creek Conservancy Partnership. Derek Schaefer of West Creek. You know, we talk most early mornings on projects that are coming up, properties that we see for sale. And the Masick property, you know, he was a great partner in the sense that this property had gone up for auction. So this is located along Aurora Road in South Sugar Reservation. It's adjacent to the Esther and Nathan Rezepka Park. So we had, you know, recently acquired that and saw this kind of inholding there. So West Creek was able to acquire the property at the auction for $550,000. That parcel that's outlined in black actually extended all the way to Aurora Road with a residence at the front. So he went through a lot split process and resold the front lot for $230,000. So then the net cost of the rear 5 acres was $285,000. So again, we worked through an auction, a lot split, a partnership, a transfer. So lots of work, but I think it really represents the best use of the land, preserving the rear that was adjacent to South Chagrin Reservation, and then the front could, you know, continue to be used for private use. Next is the Olson property in West Creek Reservation. You can see this is along West Ridgewood Drive. The goal is to connect West Ridgewood Drive all the way up to Grantwood. And so West Creek has slowly been picking away at parcels there. So the parcel outlined in black is the Olson property. It's 0.7 acres. West Creek Conservancy acquired this in early 2025, worked to demolish a structure that was on the property early this year. They also do have these two parcels under a life estate, and we partnered with them on that transaction. So when the life estate expires, those will come over. So, you know, very quickly kind of bridging that gap there, so we can connect West Creek North to Grantwood. And this is just, you know, again, not a ton of acreage, but it is highlighting some of the stuff that we do. Over the years, we've been sending out letters to these private property owners that own land in Bradley Woods Reservation. They're small quarter acre parcels that are undeveloped in a dense wet woods area. They're not really serviced by public roads or utilities. So over the years, we've had 18 parcels in this area that we've acquired either through, you know, soliciting donations, working with land banks, and then, you know, purchasing a couple for, you know, minimal market value. So this is an example. We worked with three separate landowners and acquired four parcels that total an acre. So this just gives you a quick highlight of where we've landed with our numbers for the year. You can see Lakefront Reservation is at 550 acres. That went up this year quite a bit with our Cleveland acquisitions, as well as Euclid Creek Reservation. That was our largest acquisition with the Western Reserve Land Conservancy property, so we're at 590 acres. You'll see Cuyahoga County is, we're nearing 21,000 acres. So hopefully in the next year or two, we'll surpass 21,000 acres in Cuyahoga County. And then we have everything listed by community as well. We also break down our acreage by watershed. As you saw on the earlier map, most of our acquisitions were in this corridor. So this is the Cuyahoga River watershed. The Euclid Beach property here splits kind of the Euclid Creek tribs and the Lake Erie tribs. So that's where the majority of our acreage was added this year. And just to kind of wanted to go into a few non-acquisition type projects. We get involved in a lot of things in the real estate department. And you might recall, you know, we acquired the GrainCraft or Ciro Foods property in 2023. And we went out with an RFP to kind of determine the best way to redevelop the property, you know, honoring the desire to have a riverfront trail and historic redevelopment. That RFP really didn't see the responses that we want. And then later in 2024, we acquired the Marlin property, the Cantonese fish store. So, you know, continuing to acquire acreage. So then the RFP was re-released in 2025. And we did end up entering into an MOU and a lease agreement with Cirrus Lapine. And then as part of that, they were awarded funding from the Ohio Department of Development for $5 million. So this is a continuing partnership, really trying to understand, you know, the best way to develop these areas. Obviously providing public access to the Cuyahoga Riverfront being our number one priority. So those are just some concept plans that came out of that process. And then last,
archive those.
What's that?
You'll have to archive those pictures.
Yeah. And then lastly, I just want to hit on our land stewardship. So, you know, as we acquire more acreage, we're constantly reminded that a large part of our job is also to steward the properties that we do have. And so just want to highlight, because this is a lot of work that goes in with our team, is to really steward our property. We do that through monitoring for encroachments. We do it by responding to deed restrictions. Sometimes we have conflicts there, as well as monitoring our conservation easements. So that's kind of the stewardship arm of our division. So this year we did develop a conservation easement landowner's guide. And so when we have conservation easement landowners that are either interested in a conservation easement or the property transferred, and so they're a new owner of the property and want to understand what a conservation easement is, it's just a quick guide of what that means, what the terms and conditions are, who to contact if they have questions, letting them know that we'll be out to keep our eyes on the property and make sure they're upholding their terms as well as our terms of the easement. So that's been really well received. We also put together a park manager's guide. We work very closely with park operations and natural resources as we're identifying encroachments. It's a huge undertaking, so we try to split up our roles and responsibilities. You know, our park managers are in the field. Often they're the first ones to come upon, you know, a tree cutting or something. And then we try to take more of the administrative role, writing letters. And then, you know, if it has to be elevated to legal action, that's where we're more involved. We've also have a license agreement that is a template agreement that we can use in rare circumstances where some encroachments are going to be harder to resolve in the short term. You know, maybe it's a retaining wall that somebody built 30 years ago and it's failing, and removing it doesn't make the most sense, but we don't want someone to replace it in the future. So it's something we can put in place with the goal is the long-term removal, but it's not something that happens necessarily immediately. So those are options that we have.
Question, mm-hmm. To what extent do we or don't we coordinate with municipalities, like their building department, service department, for eyes and ears, kind of?
We get notices almost weekly, if not daily, from communities when it's often when people are applying for a building permit and variances are being requested, so they'll give us the opportunity as a neighbor to review those things, and that's often when we get involved if we have deed restrictions. Or is something as similar as they're draining their stormwater towards our property, we'll comment on that. So we do have a lot of interaction. Most of the communities are very good. We go back and forth with letters and communication all the time.
Thanks.
Yeah. And then we've also been developing what you can see pictured here is a photo point documentation report. So when we go out to conservation easements or we'll, you know, highlight where we are on the property with these numbers, and then the numbers correspond to some areas that require cleanup. So that's just been a really good way to communicate with landowners very clearly where this is, what our expected resolution is. And we use this through a Folk from Field app. So it's a software you can take out in the field. You can operate it from your cell phone. You can operate it from an iPad. It has geospatial ability to locate photo points, even like what direction you're looking. So you can kind of see what's going on. But this is Kate, our intern from last summer. She's wearing a GPS unit that has drastically improved our efficiency in this program. That unit can get you within centimeters of a property boundary, as opposed to if you're using your cell phone, it might be more like meters. So we do rely on our surveyors to post stakes, as you can see there, when we're right on the line, but this device has really helped us to not have to like have our surveyors come out on every encroachment issue. We can really identify, and it's been really well received from the landowners too. They're like, thank you so much, like I didn't even know. So again, we're trying to be very educational, very proactive, less punitive. So this has been a great development.
To what extent do we have to resurvey when you find out you have field data that don't match?
Yeah, we try to reserve the surveyors for larger encroachments, and I'll get into the kind of how we've kind of got a light, moderate, and severe level that we're starting to approach things with. So if someone's mowing 5 feet over the property line, that's not.
No, I'm saying when you find out the database isn't accurate, you ever run into that where public records, you find out these are old surveys,
yeah,
and they're off.
Yeah, and like what happens a lot is people are relying on Cuyahoga County mapping software, and sometimes our boundary and their boundary don't necessarily match.
Right.
So yeah, in those instances, we'll send the surveyors out. Yeah, we try to do as much as we can before we have to bring them out because they're so busy. We give them lots of work with title review. And but yeah, we do.
Yeah.
And they're always helpful and accommodating, which we really appreciate. So this just gives you a quick overview of what we've been finding. So this is our 2025 stewardship season. So we found that 424 property owners across a number of reservations, I think we do 6 reservations every 3 years. Yeah, that's 18. So we were in 6 different reservations. And what we do initially is we use our aerial imagery with our property boundaries and identify the encroachments first here in the office. Just by looking at aerial imagery, then we go out and field verify the boundaries. So you can see sometimes you find out no issues. Those are our favorite. So it looked like there might have been a shed there, but maybe it was just a shadow. So those are great. You can take 100 off the list there. And then total properties inspected are the combination of those two numbers. Now you'll see total number of encroachments is higher. So what we're averaging is about 2 encroachments per property. When there's an encroachment identified. But the good news is you can kind of see on the chart to the right is the majority of our encroachments can be things like organic dumping, right? It's behavioral, right? It's behavioral changes. That's what we're going to put in our light category. So we're going to send them a letter very politely. You might not be aware of your boundary. You might not be aware that organic dumping is not great for our property, because sometimes people think they're helping us by mowing or doing those kind of things. I trimmed for you. So it's more educational. It's kind of a quick letter. We don't require a lot of follow-up. As things move down, and we're just kind of moving down the chart, it tends to be more moderate to severe is when we're finding more permanent structures. So sometimes it's as simple as a fire pit, like just pull it in, just put it on your property. Other times it's, you know, a shed that's not on a concrete base, more movable, but then we have structures like decks or more permanent structures, and that's when we get a lot more engaged with the landowner and try to work towards a resolution. So I'll just end this with kind of an overview. These are where the encroachments were found this stewardship season. But I just want to give you an idea of the kind of things that we're resolving. So the top row of pictures are the before afters. and these before pictures, and these are the after pictures. So you can see there's a lot of people, it's great, they want to access our parks, but often it means building trails, building walkways, that type of thing. So we're asking people to bring these types of encroachments in back to their property. So these are all ones that we started really good communications with. You know, people are building little gardens and all kinds of little structures. So again, you can see that was removed here. This is a really unique scenario in the event. It was a combination of conservation easement and an encroachment. So the trail started on a conservation easement and then continued over our fee property to another trail. And we got, you know, we were just, our staff was just walking the property and noticed this was occurring. We immediately reached out to the landowner. He said he was about to pave it. So we got there at the right time. He was very understanding. Again, didn't understand the conservation easement for one, didn't understand the property boundaries of when that moved over to fee-owned Rocky River Reservation. And so you could see all of that was removed. We collected a small fee from him to reseed the area, working with Natural Resources on their recommendation for how we wanted to restore it. So really a team effort, but could have been a much larger problem. And that's why we're trying to be on top of these things to prevent those issues.
Wow. Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Steph, thank you so much for the amazing report and your incredible work. And, you know, thank you to Kyle Baker, who heads up this division. He's at the environmental conference. Otherwise, he'd be here this morning. But thank you to the board, your leadership, and Brian for all this land acquisition. It's amazing work, and the entire team is so dedicated, from Dana, Lex, Nate, and Lindsay, just all the work that they do. In fact, I think Kyle was on Christmas Eve negotiating some additional details. So their dedication is bar none, just so impressive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next update is. I will expect capital projects will get a rousing clap at the end too. I hope so. Sean, Jim, and Chris. Take it away.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. Myself, Jim, and Chris are excited to be before you to give a quick summary of 2025 accomplishments and then projects underway in 2026. Like real estate, we have projects going on all over the park district. Each star on the map here represents a project or a cluster of projects. And like most years, first things first, we are maintaining or improving infrastructure. We are working on ecological restoration projects. We are working on new builds. It is really the whole gamut. So what we're going to do is we're going to go alphabetically and go through reservations. So starting at Bedford, you saw this already in the action item portion of the agenda. So this is the Wood Creek Fish Passage. This is a grant-funded project where in the upper right-hand corner, we can actually remove an impediment to fish passage and help improve water quality. You just approved the guaranteed maximum price, so now we will be moving forward with the construction here this spring and summer. Seneca Phase 4. So this is our concept plan / master plan for Seneca Golf Course. And we have been working through 2025 and now finishing 2026. On renovation of the final 9 at Seneca, that's on the left. And then last year, we were able to open the driving range there at Seneca, which is a great new feature that brings additional people and has a great offering at the golf course. Barge 225, so we're going to move to Euclid Creek Reservation. Barge 225, we are continuing to work on fundraising, and we've raised funds so that this summer we can bring some light programming to the barge. And also, we've worked with Cleveland Public Power and the gas provider so that we can bring the utilities to the barge and do this work this spring and summer to set it up for the next phases of future construction as well. Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 3, still at Euclid Creek Reservation. Phase 3 will bring us from the work that we've completed at Chardon Road up to St. Clair. From there, Phase 4 will connect with the lakefront portion of the reservation. Phase 3 is nearly fully funded, and we are finishing our engineering plans and will be going out to bid here in the next few weeks. Still Euclid Creek Reservation, Old Highland Bridge. We are complete with our engineering documents and ready to bid this project. This is an old bridge from the old Highland Road that was left to the city of Euclid and to Metro Parks. And through the municipal bridge program, we received funding to replace this bridge. Garfield Boulevard, you heard Steph talk about this in the real estate report. We finished this project with the with Cuyahoga County. They are a partner. They actually constructed the project. And then we are responsible for maintenance, and the importance of this trail will help connect Garfield Park Reservation to the Towpath Trail, and then in working in the future to connect north from Mill Creek into the Union Miles neighborhood and then to the Slavic Village downtown connector. The Garfield Boulevard project is supremely important from a regional connectivity standpoint. Still in Garfield Reservation, this is a replacement of a culvert under our parkway that actually precedes the work for ODOT will be doing in replacing what is called the White House Bridge at Garfield and Henry. This work that we are now under construction on, again, was funded with the Municipal Bridge Program funding that we are now eligible for. This was one of our worst pieces of infrastructure in the entire park. So that funding is very important to help us replace this, and then we'll be done this summer. These are pictures of the interior. You can see the size of the culvert that carries Mill Creek through Garfield Reservation. Just downstream from that culvert, we received some grant funding to do stabilization of the bank of Mill Creek. This work will follow this summer. And then Hinckley Dam. We completed the vast majority of the work on the dam last year. And then we also completed about 45,000 cubic yards of dredging. Here's the boathouse. This picture is taking looking west. So all of this area of the south portions of the lake were dredged. And then the picture on the right shows where we created two stilling basins. So that's where we expect silt to fall out in the future, which will help us with management of the lake and ease how we have to dredge in the future. Just last week, we were able to float and install the docks once the lake thawed out. So we now have new docks at the boathouse, and we are preparing to open for the spring with both boat rentals and then swimming down at Spillway. Moving to Lakefront Reservation, Cleveland West Pier. So Stephanie mentioned the great partnership with the Army Corps, who invested over $7 million to retop the pier. And then we followed with new fencing, with gates, and then a utility trough on the top of the pier. This will allow us to bring utilities to the Coast Guard station. This is something that we've been working on for years and years. So we were able to get this done in 2025, and then we'll continue in the future to fundraise to bring utilities out to the Coast Guard
station. Is that open now? Can you walk on it?
It is open. The project, the Army Corps is complete, and then we are complete with our work is too. So the pier is open and open to the public.
Okay.
Go out today.
Yeah.
So moving down the coast a little bit, Lakefront Reservation, Patrick S. Parker, the Sailing Center. We are on schedule for an opening this summer. Whiting Turner has done a really good job out here. We are working on interiors, and then the photo on the left here shows you the elevated outdoor patio. These are sun shades, a trellis that actually got painted yesterday. And then we are also working on the west building. Before I get there, we've got some shots of this is the indoor boathouse. We just were able to polish the floor. And then on the right, this is the kitchen that will serve the galley at East 55th. And like I said, we're on schedule for an opening this summer. Here's some more interior shots. The trades have done an absolutely wonderful job on this project. We've got this really incredible learning staircase where the foundry will provide learning and classes and teach sailing. Here's some more interior shots. We've got finishes and restrooms underway. And then, like I mentioned, that west building, the Jack Joseph Norton Mandel Boathouse. This work is underway, and then Jim's crews will be doing the interior fit out of this building when we get it handed to us from Whiting Turner. The Mandel Community Trail, which has been mentioned, which connects North Coast Harbor and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame down in front of Burke all the way to East 55th. We are partnering with the county. They are holding the contract with Independence Excavating. This work will also be done this summer. And then, like you saw earlier in the board agenda, we are working to illuminate the trail all the way from East 9th to the intersection of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and North Marginal. At that location, we've worked with Holden Parks Trust, who has brought us some funds, and we will be instituting a trailhead and then looking at some potential trailhead parking as well. So we went through the guaranteed maximum price one for Gordon Park. This is a rendering of a north view of full build out of the park. But what we have here is phase one. So those phase one improvements, like Brian said, will include the great lawn, a playground, a restroom, revamped parking, and a trail network to connect you over to Rockefeller Park. And what we're doing in phase one is literally responding to the community through that outreach that happened in 2024 and early 25, giving the community exactly what they asked for.
Where's the tunnel?
The tunnel is in this location right here. So if we actually go back to the master plan, if you can see this LA of trees, we've planned in the future that we could connect to that tunnel. Moving to Irishtown Bend, in the May-June timeframe, Great Lakes Construction will be mobilizing to the site and in 2026 and 2027, building that portion of the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail. And then in 2027, so here's a rendering of that trail that will be under construction this year. And then the park work will follow the trail. We're still working through many of the components of the park. All of this work is grant funded, and we will be breaking ground on the park actually in 2027. Here's a rendering of the Mandel Maritime Amphitheater that is one of the main park components for Irishtown Bend Park.
Wow.
Moving to Mill Stream Run Reservation, great partnership here.
Can I ask one other question first?
Yes.
How did you drain the Irishtown Bend, that sort of steep area, or did you just scarf it out
So the Port of Cleveland, through their process to stabilize the hillside, looked at stormwater. They looked at some of the seepages in the hillside. There are actually two water collection ponds, both for water quality and stormwater management, that are on the hillside. And those are things that we're going to monitor over time to see if we need to keep them. But the port handled that as part of the stabilization project.
Okay. Dan, also ODOT, all the drainage came off the bridge here and came through the park, and there was a break in the line that was taking it down, which was causing it to basically be unabated across. So once we found that, that was one of the main sources of the water problem, because it was supposed to go all the way down to the river and it didn't.
Yeah.
So it was going into the hillside. So once we found that, it started to fix the problem.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. Wallace Lake, great project that we finished by Memorial Day in 2025. And I think we saw both our visitation and really our guest focus really highlighted here at Wallace Lake over the past year. Staying in Millstream Run, ecological restoration project, this was the removal of the Baldwin Creek Dam. This project was all grant funded, and you can now start to see the restoration taking place. Marlin property. So Stephanie mentioned the acquisition of GrainCraft. Right next to GrainCraft, the former Cantonese Classic Seafoods. We have received bids, and this structure, so that we can provide future riverfront access with the trail, will be coming down here in the coming weeks. This project is funded in partnership with Cuyahoga Land Bank. And then some bridges. Rocky River Reservation, through the Municipal Bridge Program, we were able to complete replacement of the Valley Parkway Bridge. That project we got done in less than 3 months, and we're able to reopen this area by Cedar Point pretty quickly this past summer. And then staying in Rocky River Reservation, Stephanie also mentioned this one, the Old Lorraine Connector. We expect that we'll be cutting the ribbon this August. We've really progressed in the past few months, and now that spring is hopefully here tomorrow, like Brian said, we could be ramping back up with construction to do final work on walls, stoning, and paving of the trail. Here's some photos of the trail bed prior to stoning. Staying in Rocky River Reservation, another grant-funded project, we will be doing some embankment work to further protect Rocky River Nature Center, and then we expect to actually bring forward to you in next month's board meeting a change order with the contractor, because we now have the opportunity to paint the underside of the deck, so we're going to take that opportunity to get it done as economically as possible. And then also this morning, you saw in the award of bid that we now have a contractor within budget to install the new kayak launch and construct the new ramp at Rocky River Reservation. And then South Chagrin Reservation, the Hawthorne Bridge, we got this done in 2025. And again, this was grant funded through the Municipal Bridge Program. And then Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail, phase one is done and open to users. And phase two, we are working on to complete by 2027 when we cross the Chagrin River. And then finishing at West Creek, we did some interior work and working with trades. This is in the West Creek Watershed Stewardship Center to provide more space for learning. And then at West Creek, we have the West Creek Greenway under construction. We expect to be done and open with this trail by Memorial Day. I'm going to hand it to Jim on some park ops updates.
Wow. A heck of a lot of projects.
Can we give Sean a clap? Let's give him a clap.
Great job, Sean. good morning, everybody. Great to be back. I want to highlight some of the more unique things we have going on in park ops. A lot of what Sean showed, we have a lot of participation in, and that's great. Very thankful for that. But there's also a lot going on where we're maintaining, rebuilding, building new, some of the more unique things around the park. And it really shows the talent that we are able to keep in-house to take on some of these more unique things. So we are the proud owners of a gazillion trees in the park. And sometimes when you have buildings amongst the trees, tree A meets building A, and we have a problem. So this is North Chagrin Nature Center. I'm sorry, North Chagrin Reservation. It is about a mile and a half back in the woods, very historic scenic overlook. And when the tree falls on it, we have to go in and figure out how to take care of it. So things that happen like this are unique and challenging.
Just happened,
yeah. Wow. Last year, yep. Unique and challenging for a few different reasons. A, the location, a mile and a half back in the woods, really can't get full-size equipment back there to take care of it.
It's a hike.
Yep. B, the materials that we have to use. We're not going to go in there and put some, you know, current lumberyard posts back in and rebuild it with current lumber. We want to try to source materials that match the original as close as we can. And then C, how the people that built this, the techniques they used is just not something that you can come by with a regular modern day carpenter. So we employ guys that take challenges like this on readily and love it and put their talents to use. So you can see here, we're starting to put the pieces back together after forestry came in and took the tree off the building. We also have in-house mason staff who noticed some structural damage as part of that impact. In addition to just weathering overall, who put the masonry back together. And then we were able to find the stain and match it almost exactly.
This was seamless.
Seamless, yeah. Oh, yeah. So no, a little before and after here, this is what we were able to walk away from. So after this project, we felt pretty good. We're walking pretty tall, smiling a lot. I said, okay, well, we got this guy now. This is Squire Rich Barn over in Brecksville right off Route 21, and it's affiliate property, but we are the owners of the barn. And you can see the on the left here, when you start to see sags in the ridgeline, usually not a great thing. When you look at a wall and it has a distinct lean and twist to it, not a great thing. And then on the back of the building, when you see a hump on the gutter line right there, all signs point to structural problems. So similar construction that we had on the overlook, I was actually holding the camera level right here. The steps are not level. Very interesting feeling when you're walking up steps that are at that sort of a lean. You can see here a structural beam had completely sheared right in half. And then just general rot on the structure itself. I'm told we don't have an exact date, but 1850s-ish is what I'm hearing for the barn. Not confirmed, just a rumor. Either way, I was in there. It's old, regardless of how old. Also in there, you could see they had built a second story here that just did not meet structural current day regulations. So we decided the first thing is we took that second story out and decided to make it just a open barn. And what that did is it really showed where the crux of our problems were as far as structural integrity goes. We were able to source materials from the same vendor that we were able to at North Chagrin Overlook and start putting these pieces back together. And when I say mortise and tenon, that's modern day mortise and tenon right there that our guys were able to simulate what's going on in the rest of the barn everywhere else and did an absolute phenomenal job putting this thing back together. So when you look at when you look at something that's happening like this, to me, there's clearly something going on right here in this load-bearing wall that's causing that. And sure enough, the span inside of these two members right here was just a little too long for comfort. So we were able to go in, add additional footings, and put these intermediate columns in right here. So when you start with a wall that looks like this and a roof that looks like this, after we go in and do our thing, we have a roof that's straight across like that, and we have a wall that's perfectly plumb right there. The last thing that we're going to do is this siding right here replicates as close as we could find to the original siding. We had to remove this siding as part of the rebuild. The rest of the building is now going to get resided as soon as the weather clears up for us. Over at West Creek Mountain Bike Trail, over the past 5 years, we've been working away on different phases. This was the final phase. This is the Parmandale property. It's now called High Point Park. Jackson Wolf and the trails crew went in here to put the final phase of the mountain bike trail in. And in addition to adding 2.5 additional miles, we were able to put some fun little features in here as well that are optional. They're not part of the trail. You can bypass this easily. But what we're seeing is that people are readily taking them on, myself included, which did not end very well. there's video of it. We don't have to show that. But these right here are just little unique structures that just kind of add a little bit more to what the traditional mountain bike trail had held for us. In addition to that, we built it with the regulations that allowed us to accommodate our first ever NICA youth mountain bike trail. So NICA is the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. And they run a competitive youth racing series across the whole state of Ohio. They had never been north of Canton until we were able to build this trail right here that complied with their regulations that they need to hold a race. So when it was all said and done, West Creek Mountain Bike Trail consisted of 6 miles. We made sure that we built 3.5 of the 6 miles to comply with the regulations. We were able to hold the first ever Northern Ohio NICA event at West Creek. We had 220 racers that showed up. It's grades 6 through 12, 220 racers, over 400 attendees. And these kids, when they came, they got after it here. So that's Jackson Wolf in the background video. He was just in his absolute heaven out there as far as mountain bikes go. And then what's unique about this is that not only do they show up for participation, it's a 3-day event. On Saturday is a family-friendly ride, so you can ride, the competitors can ride the course with their family if they choose, but then they usually camp overnight. So we were able to provide the whole upper area there as a giant campground for these 220 racers to partake in should they choose, and they even let Erica Hirsch here, who's our trails program manager, she was the official timekeeper for a portion of it. So smashing success. I want to point out, when this group left, there was zero specks of litter left with their footprint. They cleaned up after themselves so well. The feedback that we got was that they were thrilled with the event, and we plan to have them back again this year.
Did they clean it up as well as the polo people did in Gates Mills at the polo place?
Yes, they did. We were very satisfied with how they left the site. It was perfect.
Better than the polo people?
I can't rank one versus the other. Let's say they were comparable. So. South Gordon, as part of the first phase of work out there, we were sent in to do the decommissioning of the baseball fields. There were four fields out there, 8 sets of bleachers. 6 of those bleachers were your traditional pre-manufactured aluminum. Those are being used elsewhere now as bleachers. But these were actually built out of solid steel, wood, and I-beams. So when we started taking these things apart, we thought to ourselves, boy, these steel structures right here, they're of value. And we could take them to the scrapyard, and we could recycle them. But we thought, well, let's get a little creative. So we teamed up with Polaris Career Center. We brought a couple steel fab students in, high school kids. They kind of led the charge. And we went through and we stripped all of these vertical components of these beams and made them into beams that we can use in the woods for trails. So the great thing about these beams, not only are they intact after we repainted them, but the weight per lineal foot is very much reasonable. So we can take this beam right here. They're 17 pounds per lineal foot. So we can take this beam right here, and with 4 people, we can walk that back into the woods to build trail bridges. So we were able to reinvent what these beams were used for in the past. This is a bridge that we just finished out at Squire's Castle. It looks like a timber bridge. It's actually those steel beams that we used as a substructure, and then we were able to repurpose some old poles from the Acacia driving range from way back in the day and give it the effect of a timber bridge because that's what was there before. But the reality is that behind these timbers is actually a steel structure. This is a bridle trail bridge that we're building in Brecksville. This is a trail bridge that we built at the Polo Fields in South Chagrin. As part of this project right here, we were able to take out some problematic culverts and complete the stream restoration project, which is just before it reaches the Chagrin River right there. And then these are a couple beams getting ready to go out to Ironwood to build a new cart path bridge out there. We plan to break ground out there in the next couple weeks.
That's next.
Eastern Hemlock Trail is part of the trails efforts. We were donor funded to do a 2.5 mile rehab of the trail that connects My Mountain up to Harriet Keeler Pavilion. So the trails crew took this on midsummer. As part of that, we're also moving ourselves down into Chippewa Gorge Phase 2. If you guys have been able to walk Chippewa Gorge Phase 1, it's one of the most dramatic trails that we have in the park district. We're looking to add Phase 2 to get us down into areas that look like this on Chippewa Creek. It's absolutely breathtaking. And as part of that, the area that we're working in is very highly sensitive, a lot of natural resource benefit out there. So we have to get all the equipment in and all, I'm sorry, we have to get all the materials in without using equipment. So what we've done over the last 4 weeks is we've assembled a series of highlines. And you can watch here on the right-hand side, we are flying these rocks in on cables. As of this morning, the plan is 268 steps that they've hauled in so far. And what they're doing from the top of the hill, they're taking them down on Highline to an intermediate staging area halfway down the hill. And from there, we're flying these things left and right along the hillside to hit the six different areas that we're going to build these masonry steps at. So very unique construction techniques, just getting the stuff down to where it has to go. It's one thing to build it with a low imprint. It's very challenging to get the stuff in there to build it without disturbing anything. These guys have figured it out. So
now, are these our guys?
These are all that I'm showcasing right here is all our internal construction divisions. Yep.
Fantastic.
Brecksville Trail Network, when you put all those pieces together, if you look here on the right, this is the My Mountain Trail Complex that was done with a portion going to down to River Road there. This is the Eastern Hemlock section that was just rehabbed. This is the Chippewa Gorge Phase 1 and Phase 2. All in all, when this is all done, this entire trail network here will be over just under 5 miles of completely rehabilitated trail network, completely donor funded. So we are very thankful and very fortunate to be part of this process. Rocky River Nature Center dipping deck. Does everybody remember Superstorm Sandy? I think it was 2013. Wiped out the original dipping deck that was just off the Nature Center trail there. Kind of went back and forth over the years what we're going to do. We had an opportunity due to the barge. We had to relocate some floating docks. So we were able to take this dock system right here that we used last year on the Byers Pond floating dock. We had some left over. So we were able to cut down some of the steel structure to get the students closer to the water. We're able to take it out to Rocky River and assemble it in a U fashion. Utilizing the same techniques that we did for the floating boardwalk at Byers Pond. And when it's all said and done, we now have this very scenic area out here that not only are people utilizing for birdwatching and whatever, but also is incorporated into our programming where the Nature Center staff is able to take kids out here and do their traditional dipping down into the water and looking at all the water through the organisms and all that. So with that, last year we did the Byers Pond, kind of figured out our technique and how we want to build these floating boardwalks. This was 147 feet long. This year, we scaled back a little bit, but a little bit more unique. And we did this project here at Rocky River Nature Center. It's about 80 lineal feet total of floating boardwalk. So just this morning, and this was the technique that we were using, we kind of made our own little barge with the tower there. This morning, we looked at the trail grant application for the Hinckley Lake proposed trail work. We have the area over here where the pine trees were just taken down. And this area right here that was highlighted, that's an area that we are looking to replace the eroding trail there with floating boardwalk. So with this being 147 feet, this was 80 feet. I was like, all right, this will be 900 feet. And they were like, Jim, 80 feet, 150, 900, right? It's like, yeah, we have the technique down. We have the process down. We could put these a mile long if we wanted to. It's just a matter of how much time we have and how many financial resources we want to put into it. So hopefully with the grant going through and all of the dollars falling into place, we will be able to expand and put a bigger floating boardwalk complex right here that'll then allow us to decommission some of this eroding trail that's happening along the lake as well. Manikiki Golf Course, real quick. Over the last two winters, our golf construction and our site construction divisions have put all of this pipe in the ground. When you add all this up, it's over 72,000 lineal feet of pipe. And included in that is over 2,500 sprinkler heads. Did all that ourselves in-house with our own staff and our own equipment. We also took on renovations of the clubhouse exterior. Whole new roof went on. We had issues with the front of the building with some columns. Now, structural engineering again. Usually columns need to sit on something down here to make them effective. When we opened these things up, we saw over the years these Douglas fir columns were starting to, the rot was starting to eat its way up the column, so obviously not great. So we had to come up with a way to replace them. These columns are 24 feet tall, and typically only the bottom 2 feet were bad. These are solid 8x8 Douglas fir columns. A, we couldn't get them readily available. B, if we did, they were a fortune. So we used some problem solving and figured out a way to just replace all the bottom pieces of the bad columns, keeping most of the primary columns intact. But then we had this thing where we had to figure out how to cover up all of our disturbance that was going on the bottom. So we decided to create this raised panel look on the bottom of these columns, which everybody agrees was a nice way to A, not only cover up all the disturbance that we did, but B, it also complements the style of the building as well. With that, we had some areas going on the front of the building that was starting to get water behind the masonry, and this brick wall was starting to fall apart. Our in-house masonry crew came through and they rebuilt the entire thing. We were then able to whitewash it to make it match the rest of the building. And then these lights are all left over from Acacia, and I've been sitting on these lights for the past, 8 years, wondering what are we gonna do with these things. Well, here we had a perfect opportunity. We went through with our crews. We sandblasted all these in our sandblast shop at Rocky River, repainted everything, and we were able to replace all the exterior lights on the building as well. And you would never know that these lights here were taken from a clubhouse, 3 or 4 miles down the road, and put on this historic
clubhouse to another.
Yeah. Sleepy Hollow Bridge replacement. There's two big bridges back on the cart path network. This is hole 6. There's another one on hole 13. This is a 160-foot timber bridge. Right here, 25 feet in the air. Very challenging to figure out how to rebuild it, solid timber bridge. So what we decided to do, because we had to keep the bridge in service, so rebuilding the bridge underneath while people are walking across it, very challenging. However, we were able to put our heads together, come up with a structural scaffolding system that not only allowed our crews to work off of, like you see here, but if you look up here, put a series of I-beams up here with hydraulic jacks, we were able to use the scaffolding and we jacked the bridge up off of the column structure. We were able to dismantle the entire column structure one by one and rebuild it and lower the bridge back down. People walking above, aside from hearing us, laughing and joking and coughing and whatever, had no idea that they were walking over a bridge that was being rebuilt literally under their feet as they were walking across the top. And you can see here some of the magnitude of the height there, a good 25 feet in the air. After we did that, we felt good about it. We were able to source some LVL beams here out of California. So we have treated lumber today, where basically they put it into a oven and they try to inject it with pressure to pressure treat the lumber for weather resistance, which is a great process. But when you're dealing with structures that are this big, a lot of times that penetration does not get all the way through to the inner core of the wood structure. These beams right here, we were able to find out of California. These are LVL treated, so they treat all of the pieces parts of the beam first, very easily get that full penetration of weather resistance, and then they glue them all together after that. So we don't have to worry about the inner core of these things rotting out on us because they are literally pressure treated throughout the entire thing before they are put together.
How thick are the pieces?
So these here?
Yeah.
These are 4 inches wide, and they are 16 inches deep. So they are substantial. Mm-hmm. Also, for us to source out and easily manage 4x16s, 25 feet long, they weigh a gazillion pounds. Because of the construction composition of how they do this here, they are 2/3 of the weight. And again, don't have the opportunity to bring in cranes, don't have the opportunity for large equipment, working literally in the middle of the woods on the golf course. We were able to handle these things with our manpower and not have to worry too much about having big equipment back there for the disturbance. So they're able to do section by section, 160 feet across, rebuild the handrail as well. And then we went over to hole 13, same exact type of bridge, a little bit shorter, but same concept. And you can see here, this is just as of last week, all these column structures are replaced, and we're starting to replace each section of joists and decking as we move across. I would expect this bridge to be open by the end of the month. Sleepy Hollow Golf Course, some befores and afters. These were pictures of the clubhouse before. After we walked away, we made it look like this. Rebecca Fitz and the building trades team had a huge hand in all of these. This is the Tinker's Creek Eats and Treats. This is what we started with. This is what we walked away with. See this detail on the wall? Rebecca had an idea for a waffle cone inspiration for the paneling. All right, well, how do we build waffle cone? Well, we went to our CNC router in our building trade shop. We were able to have our CNC router replicate that design and build that paneling for us. Ironwood Clubhouse, befores, afters. Emerald Necklace Marina, the largest solid surface project we've taken on ourselves. This is one solid piece of countertop here at Emerald Necklace Cafe. You can see our two carpenters here working on it. Some befores and afters. Outside at Emerald Necklace Marina, one of the more unique things we're doing, this right here is a pad we're going to pour for a boat washing, power washing station. It's a concrete pad. Everything drains to this trench drain, and it goes to this catch basin. So if it rains today and we're not washing boats, we'll simply open this valve right here inside this catch basin, and it'll drain to the ditch right there. If we are washing boats, we are not allowed per EPA guidelines to discharge that dirty water into an open water system. We have to treat it. So we close this valve and open this valve. That valve there routes everything into this system right here. That system right there consists of a preliminary grease interceptor type to filter out all of the pollutants right off the bat. It then goes to a 500-gallon septic system that is right there that, again, filtrates even more of the solids and pollutants out of it. It then goes into here, into a pump station that has a pump submerged, it's like a sump pump at home, pumps it up and into this thing right here that we bought out of a firm in Florida. This thing right here takes that water, lets it settle in this basin, runs it through a filter there, two more filters there, and then it comes out of this line right here and goes to a power washer right there. We hook the hose up and continue to power wash boats. So what we've effectively designed and created is a recirculating treatment system for our own dirty water that'll just keep cycling over and over and over. These things are sold as a unit on their own. We decided, then the feedback that we got is these filters, they gunk up pretty fast. We decided to put a series of pretreatments in to take most of those pollutants out before it gets to our very complicated system, package system that we bought. And we expect then to get one set of filters should hopefully last us 2 years instead of 2 months. So we are just about ready to put this online. We have to pour the concrete for that slab and we will be open for business. Two more things. Red Wing Cabin, you could lean against this wall in Hinckley and you could shake the entire building, had seen better days. So in a short term, it looked like that. And as of last week, it looked like this. We are rebuilding Red Wing Cabin. We expect this to be done by the end of this year to be open for reservables next year. It'll have a awesome masonry fireplace that I cannot wait to show everybody when we're done with that. And then the sign shop, we are very fortunate to have very talented artists in our carpentry shop. These are some of our efforts as of last year. Obviously, Primate Cats and Aquatics, all the signage for Wallace Lake you can see here. And then there's some stuff going on at the zoo. This guy right here, every time I walk in there, he looks a little bit more and more realistic. You can see we will cut this with the CNC router, and then our artists go through and they hand carve all of the texture, in this case, of the gorilla's skin or fur or whatever it might be, all his facial components. That's all done with our sign manufacturers in-house and their artistic ability. So that is a great segue into Dr. Kuhar.
We're almost there, commissioners. I will be quick because we've been basically the zoo's capital projects have been one of two things, either primate forest, and I'll talk about that at the end, or maintenance infrastructure repairs. We did not open a new exhibit in 2020 five. So we've been doing a lot of infrastructure. A lot of that was to get us ready for our AZA accreditation inspection last summer. So this is a big project, and this is a project that keeps showing its value. We had lost a big line, a medium voltage electrical that ran from basically just outside this building down along Wildlife Way down to Australia. And what that loss of that line, which was a direct buried cable directly under our perimeter fence, by losing that line, it prevented us the ability to backfeed electricity from the different locations where it comes into the zoo. We have a lot of power outages on this property. The CPP infrastructure is aged, and we have a variety of things that cause power outages, probably one a month. So having the ability to backfeed between the two locations is critical. The team went through a really complicated process. You know, basically, this is our perimeter fence, right? So we have to maintain this for USDA and AZA standards. So we are able to put up a temporary fence, get down there, get the conduit in, get that line run, and then get a perimeter fence reinstalled. So a lot of labor with that project, but it's going to have, it's already paying dividends in our ability to backfeed. There will be a second phase, which runs that line underneath the road and to a new transformer that'll happen in 2026. This is a roof replacement, a lot of roof and structural repairs, getting work on the giraffe barn done, getting the skylights replaced, getting that building watertight. Was a really big project. This was a really great partnership with our planning and design team. These panels, by being able to kind of pre-build these panels, crane them in and install them, really decreased the amount of construction time and the impact to giraffes, who can be really squirrely to anything that's new, let alone a really major roofing project on their barn. So we're able to knock this out earlier in 2025. And then at the bottom of the giraffe hill, we had it's called various things over the years. It was a beer hut. We called it Wild Fries, where we're selling some food out of there. But that building was right in the location of when we do get floods, and we have had a number of floods in this area, that was just getting washed out. So what we did was remove that building, put a poured concrete pad with some tables and chairs, a really nice outdoor space. And then what we worked with Aramark, and we actually brought a change to the board several months ago, was bring in these trailers. So what this allows us to do is have food service at the bottom of that giraffe hill, but when we're expecting a flood, we can go in, hook those up to a vehicle and move them out of the floodplain to help reduce our potential damages when we get those kinds of flood events. So that's a significant improvement. And those trailers will be out there hopefully in the next couple of weeks. They're getting signage right now. The plan is to have those ready for spring break. Hopefully we'll have some decent weather for that. Another really complicated project, much more complicated than we had hoped it would be, was replacing our gray kangaroo barn. This barn was a really old facility, a lot of wear and tear on it. What we were able to do is take that down, build a new building, and most importantly, install this caging to make it much more functional in terms of bringing the different mobs into the building, giving them access to the exhibit space. So this project ran through most of 2025. We were able to get animals back into it towards the end of 2025, and we're starting to see some really good use of that exhibit space now as the weather breaks into the spring. These are kind of the things that happen periodically. These multi-pane laminated glass that are animal containment, these are triple pane glasses. And occasionally, because of shifting in the building, age, we'll get a panel that just cracks. So on the left, this image here, we installed a temporary barrier here and then brought the glass panel in. The first panel broke, so then we had to order a second panel and bring that in. And it's a really complicated process where they use a spider crane to get that really large, really heavy piece of glass into these spaces. This is something that we're doing right now, replacing panels in the old rainforest in the primate forest project. But these are just kind of maintenance things that pop up from time to time, as well as our gate repairs. We've had to replace a couple of gates. This is what we call gate N. This is underneath the Fulton Road Bridge. And we had a vehicle strike this gate and destroyed not only the gate, but the opener. So we had to order that piece out. My team got that replaced, and that's back up and automated. But these are just kind of the normal wear and tear things that happen. Probably the most significant capital project that we completed was the complete repaving of the front entrance to the zoo. So that's a combination of both asphalt and concrete. But the big thing here is that we were removing the pavers. Much of this front entrance was pavers, which seems great for a lot of reasons, but over time they just settle, they sink, they create trip hazards, they're hard to maintain, they're hard to plow. So having this change and getting that concrete and asphalt in there has made the front entrance significantly, we've reduced the trip hazards significantly. We do have a couple punch lists for some areas around these posts. We didn't like the way they paved the bases, so we're still kind of working on a change on these in 2026, but this project is essentially done other than those minor changes there. My team also sometimes, it's addition by subtraction. So one of the things that we did in 2025 is remove the old giraffe feeding deck. This area had been blocked off for several years now, was all rotted underneath that. We kind of had some plans of some different ideas of what to do with that space, but what we did in 2025 was just remove that deck and then completely plant it with a pollinator garden. And actually the space looks fabulous with what our team did in putting a pollinator garden in that space. So at this point, we're not looking at putting any other infrastructure in there that we would have to maintain long term. It's a nice green space addition to the area. And then this is a project that was funded through Cuyahoga County Board of Developmental Disabilities. It was a sensory room. So this is something that I wasn't sure what the impact would be. We had a lot of folks telling us that maybe it would be of value to us, and my team basically turned an old gift shop that we hadn't been using very often and turned this into a sensory room for those with sensory issues when they come into the zoo. It was so popular. When we opened it, we had this curtain as the dividing line. It was so popular that it kind of turned into a playground, which sort of defeated the purpose of having a space where if you had sensory issues, you could kind of be alone. So this past winter, my team went back in and changed out this entryway to this key-coded door entrance. We've had tremendous feedback from families who utilize this space, a really valuable space, a really valuable asset that I wasn't even aware that we needed. So having this being grant funded has been really helpful for us and really valuable for our guests.
What is a calming room?
I'm sorry?
What is a calming room? Is it just very quiet?
It's low light, soothing music, a couple of activities. It's basically just a place to kind of calm down for individuals that are overstimulated by everything that's going on. You see they have these at many sports arenas and amusement parks. It's just if you're there and it's just overstimulation, this is a place to kind of get into that space and just kind of reset for individuals that are overstimulated and allows them to continue to enjoy the experience and not just have to go home because it's a bad experience.
I see.
One at a time?
It has the capacity to do a couple at a time. These are key code entrance, and the guest services team provides that key code. So we kind of control it. We want to try to accommodate as many people as we can. I would say that it's probably not used regularly by more than two or three individuals at a time.
Got it. Interesting.
And then, right now it's all primate forest all the time. So we're currently doing a lot with this project. There's some aerial shots of the project, a lot of work that's going on. And actually there's work on the inside as the weather has broken. We're back out there doing masonry on the exterior of the building. I'll show an image here of glass installation. All of this is basically a large window inside, drywall work that's happening on the inside as well. We'll spend a lot of time talking about this over the next coming weeks, but the image on the right is the new food court area. Food services on this back wall here. This is a window that will eventually look into gorilla habitat. And this is a front entrance, and literally while we were sitting here, I got images sent to me that they're starting to set the trees in this space. This is a basically looks like a forest, and then on the walls they use projection mapping to show basically a forest scene that goes out in all directions. So I think a really impactful wow moment that they're making a lot of project on. I took this picture yesterday morning. When I left yesterday, this line had been completed and these top two lines had completed with glass. We're pretty close to having all of that glass installed as of today. So a lot of project progress, a lot going on. It's like an anthill over there with different trades all over the place. A combination of both our external contractors as well as the zoo's facility maintenance team to be able to manage that project. So With that, I just wanted to recognize on behalf of Sean and Jim, Michelle Crawford, who helped set up this project, did a lot of work in helping source images, and she does a lot of work in helping us maintain the budgets and tracking particularly really complicated projects like the primate forest.
Doesn't go without saying that this team does an absolutely amazing job from top to bottom. Again, we're very proud of the retirees, 139 years, but as you can see, the future is very bright, and we continue to maintain this historic park district. That is the last information item. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is April 23rd in the Rezepka Room. There is an executive session. Rose?
Yes. Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of personnel matters, specifically employment?
Move the motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Yvette Itu.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
We're going into executive session, and in the session itself, we never take any formal action by law, but we anticipate when we come back, we will reconvene in order to take some formal action, just so you're aware. Thank you.
We are back in public session and finished with the executive session. Is there a motion to appoint Gary Butzbach as the interim CFO / treasurer, replacing and superseding prior resolutions 18-06-01 and resolution 21-12-187? And the board would designate in the following order: the controller, number one, the director of accounting, number two, the director of business systems, number three, as the designees to act in the absence of either the interim CFO or the regular CFO.
Do you want to
just say so moved?
Yeah, just so moved. Fine.
Second.
Roll call. I think we do a roll call on this.
Regular vote is fine since we're back in regular session.
Okay, I thought it would be more formal.
Okay, we could do more formal.
Yeah.
Sure.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes.
Yvette Itu?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
And I think that's it. Yep, motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.